I'm Brandy Cruz. This is Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not become a subscriber already, help us grow this movement, grow this mission. You can do so in two ways: at patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. Undivided is presented by our founding sponsor, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. The number one job of elected leaders is to ensure public safety, and that's what we're going to talk about on the show today. Now, why is public safety the number one responsibility of those in power? Well, if you don't feel safe, then nothing else really matters. To put it more bluntly, if you're dead, then nothing else matters. And likewise, it is the number one responsibility, or should be the number one responsibility, of a free press to hold elected leaders accountable for living up to their obligation to ensure public safety. If we fail to hold them accountable, then we are letting them off the hook for their failure. And if we do that, then what the hell is the point of the press anyway? You know, there are times over the past 8 months where I've really questioned my decision to leave the mainstream media. And then every once in a while, I get a reminder of why it was absolutely necessary for me to do so. And this weekend, I got one of those reminders. On Saturday morning, I sent out a very innocuous tweet. It was a screenshot of three tweets from the Seattle Police Department that the agency sent out over the span of just a few hours, and each of them was about a different shooting in the city. One of them was a shooting at a busy bar down near the stadiums, and a video of it was posted by the Instagram account Seattle Looks Like Shit. So I posted all three SPD tweets about the shootings, and I said simply, "Overnight in Seattle." A simple, factual statement absent any commentary or hyperbole. But apparently one of the city's longest-serving reporters at the newspaper of record, the Seattle Times, was so offended by that three-word tweet that he simply had to respond to it. "Time to move to Renton. Oh, wait," he wrote, and then put a little emoji with an eye roll. He tweeted that as if pointing out that there's also crime in cities south of Seattle somehow absolves Seattle of its part in that crime crisis. I responded, "Bad there too, and a lot of other cities." After all, on the show just last week, we heard from four mayors in cities south of Seattle who were very concerned about the rise in shootings and homicides in their area. And so it's not as if I've ignored the fact that there is crime happening outside of Seattle as well as inside of Seattle. So I acknowledge, yes, bad in Renton too, and a lot of other cities. But Mike Carter persisted, and with his next tweet, he told on himself. That's kind of my point. This constant drumbeat from certain factions that it's a liberal Seattle problem is disingenuous, hurtful, and does nothing to address the underlying problems. Constant drumbeat from certain factions. Huh. And what certain factions are those? Concerned citizens? Folks who don't want people dying on our streets in a pool of their own blood? Are those the certain factions that you're talking about? People who look at videos like this one and are horrified by the level of violence? Exactly are you talking about, Mike Carter? Well, I know exactly what factions he's referring to. He's referring to people on the right, or people who he perceives to be on the right, one of the smallest political factions in Seattle. Because Mike Carter, who has won two Pulitzer Prizes for his reporting at the Seattle Times, someone who is supposed to cover crime and justice with an ounce of integrity, would rather blame the quote-unquote right for pointing out Seattle's crime crisis than the left for making it as bad as it is. Mike Carter and many other mainstream journalists in Seattle would rather cover up for the failure of elected leaders to fulfill their number one obligation to the public than admit that maybe that faction of folks on the right has a point about the state of Seattle. And that is exactly why I cannot work in the mainstream media, not right now. Because when you have reporters who would rather see people die than be honest about the extent of the crime crisis in Seattle? Well, those reporters need someone to hold them accountable. I can do that from this position, independently. Working inside the system, I'm not so sure. I was reminded during this exchange about the few times that reporters in Seattle's mainstream media have actually tried to hold politicians accountable for the impact of their policies, have actually tried to be unflinchingly honest about the crises in Seattle around crime and homelessness and drug abuse. Do you remember Seattle is Dying? It was a Como News documentary that painted a really grim, sometimes at points graphic picture of what was happening on the streets of the city.
The last 5 to 10 years, it's not the place that I grew up in, and it's been really sad.
Matt Campbell lives and works in Seattle. He's raising a family, and like many others, he's mad.
It's gotten to a point where I'm embarrassed of it. I don't want to have my friends and family come here anymore.
So Seattle is Dying was made 3 years ago in 2019, and it really foretold what we are seeing on the streets of Seattle today. But if you remember at the time, Como News was vilified for doing it, absolutely vilified for doing it, for daring to show a direct reflection, a direct representation of what was actually happening on the streets. There were other media outlets who went on the attack. I want to show you some actual headlines from 2019 and after this Seattle is Dying documentary that, you know, didn't talk about, oh, wow, look at this documentary that shed light on the horrifying state of Seattle. No, it was about Como News, which at the time was owned by Sinclair, which other media outlets deemed as right-wing. And so instead of looking at this documentary and saying, wow, Seattle's in a tough position, you had other media outlets that did everything they could to vilify Como News for daring to show what was going on. Here's just a few. Seattle isn't dying. Here's how to respond to people who think it is. Seattle isn't dying yet, but the latest debate might kill it. Seattle isn't dying, and poverty isn't a crime. A recent report on misdemeanors continues a toxic narrative in local politics. Oh, and here's this one takes the cake. If Seattle is dying, here's the cause of its death. And it blames the police. What happened to Seattle is that police used excessive force, killed innocent people of color, and gassed nonviolent protesters. What happened is that my former tiny Seattle apartment that cost me $625 a month in 2003 now rents for $1,500. Yeah, not the crime crisis at all. Not the homelessness, not the drug abuse. It's the fault of rich people. It's the fault of the right wing. It's the fault of the police. Another headline, Seattle is Dying, follow-up draws harsh criticism from local homeless advocates. Seattle keeps growing despite the dying pronouncements. And this one from the Seattle Times, is Seattle dying? Crime rates tell a different story. As if we weren't actually seeing what we were seeing with our own eyes. Oh no, the video isn't honest. This is just Como News pushing right-wing propaganda. The lengths that the media went to in Seattle in 2019 to try to disprove the Seattle is Dying narrative, to try to tell people, oh, what you were seeing in that documentary, you weren't actually seeing. It's not actually true. It's a myth of the right wing. I mean, absolutely insane. You know, we already have elected leaders who gaslight us. We don't need the press gaslighting us as well. You know, Seattle was on the decline when that documentary came out in 2019. And any rationally thinking person knows that it has gotten worse, not better since then. Much worse. I imagine what could have happened, what might have been, had the media done its job for all these years, instead of trying to push back against a Seattle is dying narrative. The media had said, you know what, Seattle isn't looking so great. And we need to do our job to hold elected leaders accountable for that. We will never know if Seattle could have been in a better position right now had the media done its job 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But one thing I know for sure is that the media is just as responsible as the politicians whose bad policies put us in this place to begin with. Another Seattle journalist, former mainstream media reporter who left and really has committed himself to telling the truth about what's happening in Seattle, is our friend Jonathan Cho, senior fellow and journalist for Discovery Institute. Jonathan, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me, Brandy.
It might sound obvious given the title, but you're dropping a new series this week called Seattle's Unending Drug Crisis. Besides the unending drug crisis, what specifically are you taking a look at in that series?
Yeah, I'm just talking about and highlighting the inconvenient truth out there that the homeless crisis, the drug crisis, it all intersects. And it's on full display in some of the most public areas in Seattle, especially on 3rd Avenue and Pine Street right now in the downtown core. It's a gateway into Pike Street Market, into the shopping area, a lot of businesses. And tourists are coming by and watching people, addicts, smoking fentanyl, all kinds of drugs in plain sight. And on top of that, that black market that you know was there in the past, it's reemerged now. You have addicts who are telling me in these interviews that I'm doing on camera that they don't care about law enforcement, that they have to feed their addiction. So what they do is they go and boost. In other words, steal merchandise from these stores to sell it on the street for pennies on the dollar so they can buy these pills, now being called blues, that they can buy for $3 a pill, which is essentially fentanyl pills that they're smoking. And it's just created this vicious cycle of theft, of ongoing crime, and of course, the tragedy in this addiction. People are overdosing every single day on the streets of Seattle.
So you had posted a video several months ago going down along 3rd Avenue between Pike and Pine. And after that, the city came in, you know, they kind of swept the area, so to speak, tried to have a bigger police presence. Has that just entirely come back or is it shifted a little bit? What's the status compared to, I mean, everybody will remember, I'll play the video of just you walking and it just packed with people.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable, visual when I, walked 3rd Avenue. And it really started from that McDonald's area, right? Along Pine and, you go down Pike. That has now moved and has been confined primarily to that abandoned stretch of buildings, basically, at the corner of 3rd and Pike now, near the Walgreens. The drug users, the addicts, the people selling stolen merchandise, that moved to the side streets. It went away for a little while when they started to add the, police mobile precinct, when they had officers on patrol on bikes. But it just, came back. There were moments I'd go back at least once a week to see, hey, what's going on? And it was actually clear at times. And I have video of this and I was documenting it for pretty much the past 2-3 months. But I'd say just in the past few weeks, it's just come roaring back. And, maybe some will say it was always there. It never went away, but it was, hidden in the side streets, alleys. But now 3rd and Pike is one of the main epicenters of this type of activity. It's also come back in Little Saigon near 12th and Jackson. And now this activity has also spilled out to Westlake Park. Go there at night and you will see dozens of drug addicts. And here's the kicker. The police, we all know that there aren't enough officers right now in the city right now. All they can really do is do these patrols in their vehicles. They cruise by, they drive by, the addicts just turn the other way. Or in many cases, they just do it in front of the police because they know they're not going to do anything about it.
To that end, you put out two videos recently that kind of speak to their real lack of concern about law enforcement. One of them is there was a mobile precinct station down there and people were graffitiing it.
Yeah, first of all, so just to be clear, the mayor ordered the mobile precinct to, be stationed on 3rd Avenue several months ago after a few shootings. And it's just a lot of pressure from the business community, especially Olga Sagan, the owner of Piroshki, the Russian bakery there, which, by the way, still hasn't reopened. It's temporarily closed just due to all the crime. Anyway, they put this mobile precinct there and it was It's the blue one, the up-to-date one. But that recently disappeared. And in its place is now this massive, like antiquated looking 1990s mobile precinct. And, you know, it's the worst kept secret. Everyone knows it's been sitting there empty right next to McDonald's. And the other day, lo and behold, graffiti, the vandals, they started tagging it up and leaving trash. And I thought that was ultimately insult to injury. I mean, it's just so symbolic, right? They show that they don't care about law enforcement. They don't care about accountability. And it's just become this lawless part of the city. And that's why businesses continue to leave. As we know, the Westlake Starbucks recently closed down. The Amazon Go store just a few blocks up across the street from Westlake Park, that's closed down. So it's like, which business is going to be next?
Yeah, and really quickly on the Starbucks, you know, that's been there forever. It was a busy Starbucks, but yeah, I mean, it was a constant kind of problem area for a long time. How do you think that closing further sort of degrades the situation there in downtown?
Yeah, it was one of the few remaining businesses kind of right at that corner, right? It was this visual beacon. You had a lot of people going in, going out, and you need a vibrant store like that in that area. But now it's, you pretty much have, you know, paper on the windows. There's, you know, I'm sorry, we're closed sign on the glass door. And that area now is just, hopefully won't happen, but it's like going to become like a blight. That's my concern, right? On this community until it gets filled, until another neighbor comes in. Of course, Westlake Park is right across the street. The Abercrombie and Fitch store is also closed, right? That hasn't opened, you know, that hasn't opened up pretty much since the pandemic. And of course, you have the Macy's building that continues to sit empty. So that entire intersection, no more business. So what that does, the signals is, hey, to the drug users, the dealers, the illegal activity, hey, we can go set up shop there. And I'm afraid that intersection could be next.
I don't blame the businesses, but it is kind of like saying, okay, you win, you know, criminals, you win, drug dealers, you win. We're going to give up and leave. But it does just suck the vibrancy. So for people who don't live in Seattle, who are not familiar with this area, this is what is supposed to be the heart of the city. This is the shopping district. It's right, as you said earlier, by Pike Place Market. This, when I first moved to Seattle, was a place I would go out with friends to get dinner. We would go out and have drinks near there at night. I would never even dream of doing that now. And so I just want to make that clear for people. This isn't some desolate spot in the city in the back alleyways. This is what's supposed to be the heart of the city. One other quick thing on what you mentioned about police. You know, you posted a video that I thought was interesting. It was two officers on patrol, and there was some sort of, I don't know if it was a drug deal going down or someone just using drugs, and the officers stopped and contacted them, which, you know, is a good step, right? To at least stop. And then this guy... Yeah, the guy tries to run and they take him down. What were the officers going to do in that situation?
Well, appeared the officers, and that's right. It got so much attention, Brandy, because that's extremely rare. You rarely see officers about to actually ticket. And that's what was going to happen. I saw the officer take out the ticket book. You see it in the video. The officer is about to write this alleged drug user a ticket. But instead of stopping the user, makes a run for it. But that's when the officer immediately tackles this guy. He goes to the ground. His accompanying officer holds his legs. They call for backup. He gets cuffed and he gets taken away. And at the end, you hear another officer explaining to another fella at the scene who asked, why is this guy getting arrested? And the officer said pretty much, hey, what happened is that, you know, he was going to get written up for this misdemeanor. Using drugs in a public place is still considered a misdemeanor. Of course, there's the lack of enforcement, which is a problem, but it became obstruction and an arrestable offense when he made a run for it.
He was seen using drugs, therefore committing a misdemeanor. When he failed to stop and listen to them when he ran, he committed obstruction, uh-huh. And that's why they did what they did.
Okay.
Yeah, so everyone out here, like, we obviously can't hit it all at once, but when you're out here smoking drugs, like, you're committing misdemeanors.
So that's why he was arrested. And again, I think a lot of people were pleasantly surprised. They want to see more of that. They want to see more patrols. But again, due to the fact that SPD continues to lose officers and continues to struggle to not only retain, but attract new officers to join the force. We'll see what's going to happen on Third Avenue.
Yeah, I'm absolutely glad that they've been given the green light to write tickets like that. Frankly, I thought they had stopped doing that a long time ago. Yeah, if this guy had just taken the ticket, but now he's probably, well, I don't know. We'll see if he goes to jail for it. But
we'll see what the judge does at the end of the day, or if prosecutors even decide to prosecute.
I'm sure he's already out with no bail. So I'm sure he's already out scot-free. In watching this, and again, Jonathan Cho, he's going to be launching a series called Seattle's Unending Drug Crisis, which I'm really excited to see because you've been posting some sort of snippets from some of the stuff that you've captured downtown. It seems like some of these people are very comfortable having you down there documenting their crimes.
What else, coach?
Wow.
$20, make me a lot.
20 bucks or... original coach. Authentic, huh?
Original coach. Those are Versace, Bugatti, and Marriott. Like, those are $5. Dude.
Wow.
Those sunglasses are $5.
Incredible. It's all come back, huh?
Yeah, really? Every day?
It's all come back.
Is that because they don't know what you're doing, or they're that far gone, or you've built a relationship with them? What's going on there?
I think, Brandy, you hit it all on the head. It's all of the above. What's happened now, it's this culture that has emerged, this lawless culture where I asked the users, I asked even some of the dealers, they don't care anymore. You'll see in my series, some fellas who show up on Friday night, they literally bring a couch and Corona beers and just drink. It's become like this festive atmosphere on Third Avenue mixed in with the black market, the drug dealing and the drug using. So it's like this toxic cocktail, ultimately, that just dragged down the city. And it's just hilarious at times to see tourists, though, just accidentally walk in. As I mentioned, this is kind of a gateway into Pike Place Market. So you have people going back and forth from, you know, Seattle Convention Center and so on and so forth. And they run into this. And the moment they walk in, they're like, whoa, what is this? And that reaction happens almost every time without fail.
After seeing everything that you're seeing now here on Third Avenue, would you come back to Seattle?
No, never. I would never come back there.
So look, this is something that the mayor, I know he's trying. In fairness, Mayor Bruce Harrell's trying. Yeah. SPD is trying. I can't emphasize that enough. But right now, I think what our elected officials need to do is continue to reassess what's going on. And, you know, if they need to bring back the mobile precinct, or they bring back the mobile precinct, if they need to have, you know, more officers on the street on patrol there regularly, then do that. But right now, what I'm seeing is it's just been spotty, inconsistent. And again, the criminals, the drug users, the addicts, they all know that. They own this part of Seattle.
Yeah. Before you came on, I was talking about my disappointment in a lot of the mainstream media in Seattle about a failure to really be honest about what's happening, just unflinchingly honest, because lives are at stake. And to me, you know, the number one priority of elected officials should be public safety. And therefore, that should be the number one focus of the media as well. And it's just not. For you, as you're out there and covering these things and at press conferences, do you feel the same way? Am I over-exaggerating the lack of care or concern from a lot of the press in Seattle?
Well, it really depends who you ask. And at the end of the day, your readers, your listeners, your viewers, they see the end result. And, you know, in fairness, there are still some good journalists out there here in Seattle trying. But the fact of the matter is, the reality is, our entire industry right now is going through a crisis. We're still going through the Great Resignation. If you look at Seattle television right now, I don't recognize more than half the faces. There are all these new kids coming into town now because so many of the veterans have quit or just retired or left the business altogether for various reasons. That ultimately hurts the city. That hurts our democracy when we don't have the coverage, when we don't have the journalists who know the city. So I don't know if it's necessarily a lack of, you know, caring about this issue. I have no doubt some outlets are in denial and only want to portray a certain narrative. But the reality is, this is happening. Crime is happening. Crime is surging. The drug epidemic, the crisis, the homeless crisis is still raging out of control. And there is a lack of coverage out there right now. So I'm just trying to do my part, Brandy.
Do you hear the hard questions at press conferences from other members of the media?
On occasion, and I think quite frankly, if I may be a real here, I think a lot of our officials here in Seattle now know that they're not going to get hard questions because they know so many of the media members are focused on other stories or other angles. And, you know, in many cases, they may not even know which questions they need to be asking. So we need to make sure we continue to hold all of our public officials accountable. And we need journalists to do that. And unfortunately, we need tougher questions asked of our officials.
So when is the series going to come out? When can we expect that to drop?
Well, I'm hoping it comes out either on Wednesday or Thursday. That is the hope. There are just so many moving pieces, so many new elements that I'm starting to add. But at the rate we're going, I think it's going to be a two-part series anyway. So at the very least this week, we just want to show what's happening on the ground, because I think you have some elected officials in the council who are in denial, who are just focused on all kinds of different topics. And right now, if you ask the average Seattle resident, they're going to say it's public safety and homelessness. Those are easily in the top three of most important issues, and those need to be addressed. And I think the only way, one of the best ways to hold our public officials accountable is all to show the video. This is what's happening. This is what's happening on the ground. I have footage from overnight. I have footage from the weekends. I have footage from the weekdays. And this activity is happening all hours of the day, 24/7.
And as you said, and any common sense person will watch this and say, well, it's on video. You know, obviously this is a problem. But the last time that a member of the media in Seattle put out a very raw, honest portrayal of what was happening was Seattle is Dying in 2019. And you know how that went. You worked at Como at the time, I think, or maybe you came right after that.
Yeah, those came, before
my came time. After that.
But, yeah, and I participated in the second one called Fight for the Soul of Seattle, which was the continuation, the part two.
Como was vilified for that by others in the media. You had Crosscut and the Seattle Times putting out articles rebuffing this narrative that Seattle is dying. And so that's why on Twitter over the weekend, I told you I think shared a video that you put a teaser for the series and said, you're going to be vilified for doing this and just sort of stand your ground. Are you worried about that?
I'm sorry, not at all. Not in this town. After everything that I've been through in the past 4 or 5 months, look, I stick to my convictions, and I think my job at the end of the day is to fairly and accurately show what's happening. So let's do it in context, right? Look, I don't know if Seattle's dying. I don't even know what that means anymore. Here's what I do know. I'm covering every single day on the front lines what's going on with this drug crisis, with the crime, with the homelessness. I know what I'm seeing. I need more reporters out there telling that truth. And it's just not happening right now. So I'm inviting the rest of the media here in Seattle, especially, to come out, shine a light on what's happening so we can continue this conversation. Because if we don't, it's almost like if the reporter or the story isn't covered, it's almost like it never happened. Right, Brandy? So we have to be out there to cover this stuff. And I just wish the rest of the media, some of the outlets that you mentioned, will come out there and continue to, you know, really put that balanced coverage out there of not only the positive, but also this raw reality.
100%, and it has to be relentless. And when the mob comes after you, Jonathan, again, I mean, they come after you often, I will always 100% have your back, so.
Yeah, thank you. And at this point, I've been doxxed, I've been threatened, everything, so whatever. At this point, I'm just here to tell the stories of really what's happening in Seattle. Thank you again for all your support, Brandy.
All right, and just to end on, how can people watch the series and how can they support your work?
Yeah, well, most of my work will air at fixhomelessness.org. That's our website at Discovery Institute. But in terms of these quick snippets, daily breaking, it's going to be on my Twitter at Cho Show, C-H-O-E-S-H-O-W. That's the best way.
All right, Jonathan Cho, thanks so much. Be safe out there.
Thanks again, Brandy.
So at a time when elected officials in cities like Seattle should be absolutely laser focused on public safety, again, the number one priority, nothing else matters if you're dead, what are they doing? Well, today, earlier this morning, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell had a press conference, not about public safety, about abortion. He signed a number of pieces of legislation to support reproductive rights.
We want every woman and person seeking an abortion to be able to make their decisions to seek reproductive justice with safety. Before the Supreme Court overturned Roe, we recognized immediately how that decision could impact and threaten the health of women. throughout Seattle, the Pacific Northwest, and indeed in this entire country. This is, we believe, fundamentally dangerous and bad policy. Our response collectively, and I emphasize collectively, wasn't just the city council, wasn't just the mayor. Our collective community response was based on action and working together to put and memorialize in the form of legislation bills to ensure reproductive freedom here in Seattle. It was based on equity and an understanding that often the women most likely to be impacted are women of color.
Now, in fairness to the mayor, maybe realizing how tone-deaf it would sound to talk about safety as it pertains to abortion, he didn't mention the string of shootings in Seattle that happened over the weekend, but then shoehorned the conversation back into abortion.
I would like to acknowledge other events that occurred over the weekend that involved safety. We had a rash of shootings over the weekend, as many of you know, including one where a 14-year-old girl was injured and another where a man was killed near Cal Anderson Park. We had someone killed by a light rail train on Sunday at Mount Baker Station. While details on all of these matters are still being investigated, we know that these kinds of tragedies are quite frankly just unacceptable in the city of Seattle and in this country. In all these instances, I first want to express my heartfelt sympathy to the families, friends, and communities that are impacted. Safety is my, as mayor, my core charter responsibility, and Seattle must be a place that's safe. That matters when you enjoy a park, when you take light rail, and particularly as we're here to talk about this morning, when you are seeking reproductive care. This must be a city where safety is an inherent right. So today we're taking steps to ensure abortion and reproductive health care is safe.
So look, this is a progressive city. I mean, it's not a surprise that you have politicians who, after what happened with Roe v. Wade, want to reaffirm access to reproductive rights in Seattle. But nothing's changed here. Nothing's changed in Washington State when it comes to a woman's ability to access an abortion. Yet, you know, these are some of the, I'll just read a list of the pieces of legislation that Mayor Bruce Harrell is signing into law. One adds people who have received or are seeking abortions as a protected class, ensuring their civil rights protections. Another creates, it makes it a misdemeanor for people who encroach on individuals seeking abortions or gender-affirming care. Another establishes Seattle as a sanctuary city for those seeking abortion care and prevents pursuit of out-of-state warrants related to abortions by the Seattle Police. Seattle Police weren't going to do that anyway. And finally, they appropriate $250,000 of city funds to expand access to reproductive health care by making an investment in the Northwest Abortion Access Fund. Here is a clip of Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold. I'm going to play a pretty good chunk of this. Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold talking about people who are coming here to seek abortions as medical refugees.
Here in Seattle, I know we're used to thinking about earthquakes, and many of us have emergency plans to help us survive an earthquake's aftermath. The Dobbs decision was a kind of earthquake, but not just any earthquake. For pregnant people and the people who love them, it's the big one, the catastrophic earthquake that we've always known is coming. And it's the expected fourfold increase in people seeking abortions in Washington State that could be thought of as the tidal wave created by that earthquake that's headed our way. Local providers are already reporting patients seeking care here from as far away as Texas and Louisiana. And the reality is pregnant people don't have the luxury of time to make decisions about abortion. We're at the beginning of this crisis. We know the tidal wave is headed here. Thanks to the extraordinary work of advocates and providers, we can make educated guesses about the impact and we can move to meet the challenges, but we cannot completely accurately guess today everything that will be needed to help keep what are essentially medical refugees in our country people who are from our country that are medical refugees in their own country.
So again, not a surprise that politicians in Seattle are vehemently pro-choice. I've made my views on abortion pretty clear. I'm fairly liberal on the issue of abortion. But to think that elected leaders in Seattle feel the need to waste even a second of time, to waste even a second of resources on the issue of reproductive rights is ridiculous. Nothing has changed in Seattle on that issue. Nothing. You're talking about one of the most progressive, welcoming cities in America. And to think that they need to make people who have had or are seeking abortions a protected class to ensure their civil rights, to think that they need to actually sign a law to make sure that people aren't encroached upon if they're seeking abortions or gender-affirming care. You don't need a law like that in Seattle. You don't need laws like that on the books. To think that you need a law to prevent Seattle police from working with an outside agency that wants to go after a woman who came here to seek an abortion, they're not going to do that. Seattle police weren't going to help them anyway. And $250,000 to expand access to reproductive health care? This is the kind of stuff, you know, we talk about performative politics. This is performative politics. Bruce Harrell, I think you've been doing a good job so far as Seattle mayor. This kind of stuff is ridiculous. You do not need to pander and to spend time and money on things like this. You need to be laser focused on the crime crisis, on the homeless crisis, on the drug crisis. That is the number one issue that is impacting your city right now. You don't need to waste a second of time, a minute of time, one meeting, one press conference, doing anything having to do with abortion access. This city's access to abortion has not changed, and it's not going to change. And spending any time on it is purely performative. And whatever Lisa Herbold is trying to say, I mean, gosh, I just can't even make sense of this.
For pregnant people and the people who love them, it's the big one, the catastrophic earthquake that we've always known is coming.
And the really sad part is that the media will probably cover this with more vigor than they'll cover the issues that actually matter. That's it for this episode of Undivided, which has been solely focused on an inability to deal with the crime crisis and to prioritize the crime crisis that we're seeing in communities across the country. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We will have a subscriber-only episode, as always, on Wednesday. So if you like the show but you have yet to become a subscriber, you can do that for as little as $5 a month and get access to a bonus episode every single week at patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. Undivided is presented by our founding sponsor, 1530 Mortgage. You can visit them at 1530mortgage.com.